welcome to Something's Off with Andrew Heaton. I'm your host, quote-unquote, Andrew Heaton. And today we're going to talk about the Oscars. They are dropping this weekend, and so we might give you some previews. But more importantly, I have brought on someone from Hollywood who is going to help me fix the Oscars. Discerning listeners will know that I did the same thing for the Super Bowl. I believe it is my duty as an American to improve these institutions, and I think I did fix the Super Bowl and possibly football as a sport. The same thing's going to happen today with the Oscars. We're going to figure out how to make it better and save it from itself. We'll do that in a little bit. I'm also going to do another installment of How To with Heaton. But before we do any of that, we do have to pay those bills, don't we? And that means a word from our sponsor. Something's Off with Andrew Heaton is brought to you by Spam Strangler, the service which not only blocks unwanted sales calls from telemarketers and robots, it tracks down the owners of the company and harasses them in their personal life until their relationships dissolve and they turn for comfort to ketamine. You're at home, about to enjoy a nice meal with your family. It's vegan because Greg picked that up in college, but that's fine. The important thing is you're spending time together as a family. Your phone vibrates and you pick it up. You don't recognize the number, and so you think, it might be important. You answer only to have a robotic voice ask you to press 1 if you're interested in converting your credit card frequent flyer miles into a timeshare rebate. The peace of your dinner is ruined. But you know, if you don't do something, they'll just call back 10 minutes later from a new number. So you decide to call Spam Strangler. Because at Spam Strangler, they don't stop at blocking robocalls. They ruin the lives of the people behind it. A man at Spam Strangler picks up. I have a very particular set of skills, he tells you. Skills I have acquired over a very long career. Skills that make me a nightmare for telemarketers and robocall companies. That night, the Spam Strangler tracks down the assistant manager of a robocall company and beats him within an inch of his life using a ketchup bottle. It provides him with the name and location of the robocall company's manager, who he stalks and then traps in a basement. He holds him captive there in darkness for 2 days before the manager cracks and blabs the location of the company's owner. The Spam Strangler heads to Paris to find the owner's yacht. But along the way, he finds out that one of his friends was assaulted by a Laplander. So he goes to Sweden with a club to pick fights with Laplanders in a twisted form of race-based vengeance. Fortunately, he doesn't kill anyone. And later, he realizes the error of his ways, the bigoted folly of holding an entire race responsible for the crimes of individual actors. That's good, because he moves back to London, gets widowed, but then falls in love with Claudia Schiffer. He celebrates by stopping the mayor of New York City from banning carriage horses. Then, he remembers to track down the robocall company owner in Paris. Along the way, he swings by Tatooine with his apprentice, to find a toe-headed kid with above-average midichlorians. Not sure how or what midichlorians are. You probably don't get them from eating kale, that's for sure. Regardless of what Greg tells you, even though he's a sophomore, he knows everything now. The Spam Strangler and his apprentice and the toe-headed midichlorian kid journey to Paris, only to discover that the owner of the robocall company is a Sith Lord with weird face tattoos. He kills the Spam Strangler, but his apprentice cuts the Sith in half with a lightsaber. And after that, well, you don't have any more unwanted phone calls. Spam Strangler, buy yourself some time, attention, and vengeance. Okay, before we bring on the guest and talk about the Oscars, we're going to do another installment of How To with Heaton. You may recall that last week I taught all of you how to make a meatloaf, and I've been getting feedback on how delicious your meatloaf has been. Fantastic. Today, I'm going to walk you through how to balance a checkbook. Now, I know, it's boring, and you have an app for that. That's great. But really, guys, the fundamentals of personal responsibility involve financial literacy and being able to manage basic inflow and outflow in your accounts. With balancing a checkbook, the main thing you're doing is you're keeping track of how much money you have in your account so you don't accidentally bounce a check. Bouncing a check is when you think you've got $300 in your account, but you only have $200. When you do that, the bank issues you a fee, and that costs you money. Money you could have kept with simple accounting that I'm going to walk you through right now. So, pull out your checkbooks and pull out your green visor caps. I personally, I'm going to use my the Blaze company expense checkbook, but you can use a personal account. It's the same concept, really. So yesterday, I wrote a check for $62.50 for a bottle of Lafroig Triple Wood Single Malt Scotch. So in my checkbook, I'm going to write $62.50 under amount. And I'm going to note the date yesterday and the number of the check, 2502, in the corresponding columns. Now, under description, I'm going to write prop so that management doesn't throw a snit again. Honestly, the hardest part of accounting, in my experience, is coming up with a description. For example, last week, I wrote a check using my Blaze account for $380 for a consultation. Now, in point of fact, it was really more of a client meeting. Actually, it was more of a client dinner with Stacy or possibly Candy. I don't remember the name exactly. But the key thing here is that I'm keeping track of the actual amount of money that I'm spending. So if you look over at the balance at the right of my checkbook, all of those expenses are noted. And so far this month, I have spent just shy of $12,000. With that kind of money, it's crucial you stay on top of things. I also find it's useful to overlap your financial portfolios so that if one account gets skinny, you can slough money in from another account. For example, my credit card expenses are going to be a little high this month due to unforeseen gambling losses. So I need to get some funds to my personal account over at the Citizens Underwater Bank. Now, I can't just write myself a personal check using my Blaze Company account. That's why I started a shell company called Consolidated Pencils and Supply Co. Now, I can make a checkout for $4,000 to Consolidated Pencils and Supply Co. Then, have Consolidated Pencils and Supply Co. write me, Andrew Heaton, a check for a consultation. Incidentally, this is almost exactly how the federal budget works. Once you grok that, you're qualified to be on the House Financial Services Committee. Good luck! My guest today is Mr. Andrew Young. He is a comedian and film enthusiast who lives in Hollywood, California, and he is going to help us save the Oscars. Young, thank you for coming on the program.
Hi, how are you?
I'm living the dream. Good to have you.
Good to be here.
I'm looking at this Oscars 2019 ballot. I think I saw three films this year. Like literally three films. I assume that it looks like there's about 52 options here. How many did you see so you can walk us through all of them?
Well, about three.
We've got six between us.
About three.
Okay.
Yeah, we have six between us.
All right.
That's kind of the running theme that I hear this year. Most people have not seen the Best Picture nominees, and that's not uncommon.
Wasn't there a story that broke last year where somebody on the Academy Awards admitted that he doesn't actually watch many of the films? He just has his assistants tell him, or he reads like Vanity Fair or something.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. Academy members are very, very busy.
That's true.
That is a well-known fact
about Academy Award committee members, of whom we know much.
Yeah, they have meetings.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Am I a member?
Of the Academy?
Yeah.
Do you get screeners with warning messages that tell you, don't share me?
No. No, I don't get that.
Okay. Well, that could be an address problem.
Okay. All right. So
I moved a lot.
So, okay, the films that I saw this year, Best Picture, I saw The Favorite, and I saw Vice, and I hated Vice. I think this should be a rule. If, what's his name, Christian Bale, if he doesn't win Best Actor for Vice, I think Dick Cheney should give the trophy to whoever wins instead.
So,
if Bradley Cooper wins A Star Is Born, Dick Cheney gets to give it to him. I don't want this to happen every year. I don't want Dick Cheney to be a fixture of the Oscars, although I do want to make a holographic Joan Rivers that is in perpetuity heckling people on the red carpet. I think we should immortalize her as like an android or a hologram or something. I want her around.
I think that'd go over very well.
Yeah, and that might well happen because we've got Tupac. Tupac is now a hologram.
Tupac's a hologram. We had a Prince hologram at the Super Bowl a few years ago.
Yep.
Holograms are in.
They're in, yeah. And like, you know, we used to just think it was Jedi, but now it's like rappers and stuff. So that's one thing. So yeah, I saw The Favorite. I really enjoyed that. Did you see that?
No.
Oh, okay. What did you see?
I saw Bohemian Rhapsody.
Okay, nice. All right, we're up to three.
Let's see. Hold on just a second. Let me look through the list here.
This is very well thought out.
Oh, I saw Incredibles 2.
Okay, that's in the animation category?
Yeah, yeah.
You good there?
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
I saw
you see Isle of the Dogs?
Dogs?
But you saw Isle of the Dogs, okay.
Yeah.
We might talk more about animated feature films.
Yeah.
And
I should point out that I'm on the high end of people who've seen movies in Hollywood.
Really?
Yeah.
So like most people are just they're going like dog racing at night. They're not actually going out to watch movies.
Yeah. Well, listen, if you're spending all the time watching movies, how can you make them?
That's a very good point. That is a good point. Like I don't have time to listen to other podcasts or even read the news. That would take time away from making this. A lot of the time I'm completely winging it and I'll just make stuff up. And I'm like, hey, you know, President Trump's pulling out of Syria. I made that up, and it turned out to be correct. But that was a really lucky coincidence because someone could have called me out on that.
Well, you know what they say: the best content is created in a void.
Yeah, that is a good Aristotle quote. He was really into creativity in vacuums.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Big Bang wouldn't be nearly as impressive if stuff was there.
That's a good. You know what? If it had been full of clutter, like there were bowling balls, like old hats and things. And the Big Bang happened, you'd be like, well, I guess it got that stuff out of the way. But it wouldn't be nearly
it's like when a guy shows up to a party that's full of people, no one cares.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the first guy that shows up that's interesting.
What? Okay. I think you're completely right about that.
I know.
Actors in leading role. The only one I saw was Christian Bale in Vice. I don't want him to get it. I didn't see At Eternity's Gate, but I like Willem Dafoe, so I hope he gets it.
Yeah. I feel like he's overdue for, or maybe he's won one. I don't know.
this is, folks, this is my designated Hollywood expert that I've brought on here. hey, did you see A Star Is Born?
No.
Neither did I. Is it about Lady Gaga or is she in it?
The movie is supposed to be about her coming into her own after being given an opportunity through her, through Bradley Cooper. But the movie ends up being about Bradley
See,
Cooper.
I was
supposed to,
everybody keeps saying it's a Bradley Cooper movie, and I'm confused about that because I thought it was about Lady Gaga. But it's actually about Bradley Cooper being an alcoholic?
All movies about women are actually about men being alcoholics. That's that's the story you can take away from all of that. That's
okay. Interesting.
That's how Hollywood makes movies about women. They couch it in men being alcoholics.
I think that you were completely correct on that. All right, we've knocked that one out. Actress in a leading role. I saw The Favorite, as I said, so I hope Olivia Colman gets it because I don't know any of the other films. How about you?
I have been told that Glenn Close is a good contender for that, for The Wife, which is...
Who's that guy?
Glenn Close is a lady.
Oh.
And the Wife is a film about a woman who is married to a Nobel Award winning author for literature, it kind of comes out that she's put her life on hold to help him and ended up ghostwriting a lot of his work, et cetera.
Is he an alcoholic?
I'm sure he is.
Okay, that makes sense.
He must be.
All right, cool. And then actress in supporting role. And then I'm basically through with my predictions for the Oscars, which aren't even really predictions. They're just me like circling names that I like. I only saw The Favorite advice, so I'm going to give it to Emma Stone, who I enjoyed in that film, and also I would watch Fold Laundry gladly. If there were a documentary of just Emma Stone folding laundry, 100% would watch that.
Well, here's how you know that she's a likely candidate. Her introduction in the movie is being covered in mud.
Is that... Because that makes her more likable?
It makes her more, messed up and grotesque. And, like, you know, that's how you want. It's a well-known fact that if an actress wants to win an Oscar, they should dirty themselves up a little bit.
Okay. That's kind of like when The King's Speech came out a few years ago. I watched that and I enjoyed it. And I was like, so Colin Firth, point number one, is playing royalty, point number two, with a disability, point number three. Oscar. Yeah. And I think he won it, right?
I think so.
Well done. Well, so far, Young, we have I think done a bang up job of predicting how the Oscars are going to go in 2019. I feel very comfortable with the $500 worth of gambling bets that I've made on this. What I want to talk to you about mostly is how we can save the Oscars. How can we make it better? What systemic problems are there in the Oscars? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring that up. It's something I've been thinking about. You know, it was a rough year for the Oscars.
Yeah? You mean last year?
Yet. No, this year.
Yeah. Okay.
It's already been a bit of a rough year for the Oscars.
Okay.
There was, of course, the Kevin Hart controversy.
Oh, right. Is he going to host? Who's winding up? Am I hosting? Are you hosting? Who's doing it?
I haven't been asked yet. I don't know if you have. My understanding is we're having a hostless Oscars.
Okay.
It's essentially going to be an anarcho-communist award ceremony.
They should just get a hologram to do it.
I mean,
get Tupac.
That's probably the safest bet.
Yeah.
Maybe they could get. Who would be a good hologram? Who's a good safe? I don't know. It feels like every one of our heroes slowly turns out to be a monster after we expose them. So who's a safe bet?
Robin Williams.
For Hollywood, Robin Williams.
Yeah.
You're right.
Hologram Robin Williams.
Yeah.
I could say, I think you'd do a good job.
Yeah. Well, and especially, I think people are clamoring for it after seeing that Aladdin trailer.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. Wait, so how else has it been a tough year for the Oscars?
Well, I don't know if you saw this. There was a... It was a bit of an issue where the Oscars has been talking about they're worried because they don't want a broadcast that is too long because people are checking out before the end. So,
it's like, what, 3 hours right now?
Yeah, well, it's been going over
three to 12
hours. Yeah, 3 to 12 hours,
yeah.
Given how many best songs they decide to perform and how long they are.
So that tells me that the people that run the Oscars are a bunch of cowards and they should lean into it and make it 5 hours.
Well, I mean, that's... You've hit the nail on the head, sir.
Thank you. Okay.
They've gone the exact opposite route. They were trying to cut four categories, if
really?
You believe this. They were trying to cut cinematography.
That seems like a thing that should be in there. So would they still have the award? They just wouldn't broadcast it?
Well, they would broadcast the speech after the fact, but you wouldn't get everyone's favorite part of the Oscars, which is actors walking, or actors or cinematographers, you know, whoever's winning, award winners walking past other people on the way to the stage, which... That's why I watch the Oscars, to watch other people look at them as they walk toward the stage.
That's pretty much why I watch. I just want to see if, like, Nicole Kidman's going to glare when Tom Cruise gets an award. I'm aware that that's a dated reference, but I think people know what I'm talking about.
No, that's still fresh.
Is it? Yeah. I want to see other actors put on a game face when they lose. I tune in for Schadenfreude and fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two reasons. So they're going to cut out cinematography. This is a good opportunity for them to make some money, by the way, because they can put the Oscars on a paywall and say, hey, if you want to find out who won Best Picture, you got to go ahead and do the subscription to the Oscars, but do like cinematography first and stuff like that.
Yeah, a subscription. Maybe all award shows would eventually go there.
Could be. Okay, so they're going to cut cinematography. What are the other three they were going to cut?
They were going to cut editing.
Oh, that's huge. That makes the film.
Yeah, I would say those two things are probably maybe the bedrock of what filmmaking is.
And cinematography is dancing, right? That's where you're coordinating the dancing.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. That seems less important to me.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot harder than you think because the cameras are what's doing the dancing.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
They put cameras
news
on
to
casters.
Me.
Yeah, they put cameras on casters and they, you know, make them move around in fun twirls.
Okay. Cool. All right.
Yeah.
I retract my concern. All right. So we got cinematography. We've got editing. What are the other two they were going to cut?
Makeup and hair. Which, you know, also fairly important because, I don't know if you've ever,
somebody's got to slather that mud on Emma Stone.
Exactly. And I don't know if you've ever filmed someone raw. People mostly look like monsters without makeup and hair on film.
They're terrifying. I hate going outside. I hate it. You know, here at the Blaze, I've got a designated staff that, makes me look like I'm in my 30s, which is good cause I am. And most of the other people I interact with are likewise being given some kind of beauty treatment. But, man, when you meet regular humans, you're like, oh, God, like I can't wait for the robots to take over, fix this stuff up.
Yeah, I usually look like I've been hit in the face with a griddle if I haven't put my makeup
on. Oh,
yeah,
you look like you slept in your car for the last ever and are waking up to rummage through a trash can. But when you put on a little bit of makeup, you're quite handsome.
Well, but the first part of that's true to form.
It's a nice car though.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a Volkswagen.
Yeah. It's safe. It's a safe car to live in. It's one of the safer cars to live in.
Yeah.
Or maybe that's Volvos. I don't know about Volkswagens. I don't know cars that well.
You know, me neither.
Yeah. Okay. Hair and makeup, and then the fourth category
was live action short. Which, listen.
Is that like an action film that's short? Or is it
the beginning of a gunfight.
Okay. All right. Because like, they're all live action, aren't they? Or does that mean that they're not editing it? It's like they're filming in a theater, and then they record it, and that's like, is it like a concert? Because sometimes you get on Spotify and it's live, and you're like, oh god, now I got to hear the audience. I don't want to hear that.
You don't like that?
Oh, I hate it. No, I don't. It's not live to me. I'm sitting in my car listening to Spotify. I'm not there. I'm not at Woodstock or whatever. So I want to hear the best audio quality. I don't want to hear like weird reverb and a bunch of people screaming. That to me, now I feel like I'm left out. And the audio is worse.
Hmm.
I know. I'm in the minority on that one, but I stand by it. I hate live recordings of.
I like to be told when someone else enjoyed something.
That is, I think, one of the bigger problems with films right now and television is they're getting rid of laugh tracks to let you know when you should be laughing. Yeah.
Yeah. I would argue that laugh tracks are the bedrock of comedy.
Yes, that is the staple of it. That's why it's been in such steep decline the last few years. Wait, hold on. So live action. So that's like a gunfight, like a short gunfight.
Yeah. So okay. Every year, would-be feature directors, people that want to be feature directors, have to indicate that they can do the most important thing in Hollywood, which is direct some sort of action scene.
Okay.
So they do what's called a live action short,
like a Michael Bay thing with robots.
It could be like a highly rendered CG robot scene, or it could be a good old fashioned
gunfight.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
The gunfight is coming back as a art form.
Yeah. I saw like the Ballad of Buster Scruggs, on Netflix. I there were a lot of gunfights in there. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. 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 Some of the best scenes in the history of film have been gunfights.
Mm hmm. Okay, so they're cutting out, or they wanted to cut out those four. You and I clearly are on the same page of no, expand the Oscars, add more. What would you want to add as awards categories? I've got some myself.
I've been thinking about this a lot. I think the biggest problem with the Oscars categories, as I'm sure you know, is relatability.
Yes.
Most people are watching these categories. They're like, director. I don't know what that guy does. Actress. I mean, yeah.
I mean, I know what an actress is. I don't know what like best grip is or best boy. Like that seems kind of like favoritism to me. I'm not sure if that's an Oscars category, but I don't know what it means.
Best boy is just the best guy on set.
Really? It's like a popularity award?
Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool. Actually, I would really enjoy seeing that where like, they're like, hey, you know, we've been talking about it. And, Mitch is just a great guy. He's got good energy. He remembers everybody's birthdays. He was really generous with his time. Mitch, come on up here. And then like they say nice things about Mitch. That'd be cool. That seems like a nice thing to do.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, the Oscars are not necessarily looking to reward good humans.
Well, I'm adding best boy to my list of categories that I want to see in there. I think that's a great idea. So relatability. What would you do to fix that?
Well, I think the first thing I'd do is I would add a category for, you know, we have a best song category.
Yeah,
and that's great. Everyone loves the best song.
Oh, original song. Yeah.
Sing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Best original song, you know, like Lady Gaga's singing the Shallow song. And that's
apparently Ruth Bader Ginsburg sings I'll Fight, which I didn't even I know she liked opera. I didn't know she sang. That's pretty cool. I want to check out that film now.
I believe she sings that entire thing. And
cool.
But
wow.
Here's the thing. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is a known trained singer.
Yeah.
She's had a lot of practice. And I think the problem is for a audience member, how do I relate to someone who I know is a good singer?
Right. Yeah. It's like karaoke, right? If you come
exactly.
in, if who's the lady in Wicked that I really like?
Kristen Chenoweth?
Yeah. If Kristen Chenoweth came to karaoke with me, I'd be like, well, of course you're going to knock it out of the park. Like, have a few shots and then do a song. I want to hear you when you're kind of teetering and drunk and like just barely within your abilities and range. Then
exactly.
do Bohemian Rhapsody. But I don't want to hear somebody that's really good at it get up and do it.
Well, and here's the thing. You don't have to be bad. You can still be somewhat impressive, but I have to believe that character sang that thing, right?
Right. That we're not going into like Broadway musical mode where like I'm merely an accountant, but then I'm a fantastic, like you in the film, you're saying you want the accountant to sound like an accountant who happens to be a good singer.
Yeah. For instance, let me give you some examples. And I would call this category best song from a non-singer,
I like that. Know, okay, good. Know. Yeah.
So for there was a Bill Murray was in a movie called Lost in Translation a few years back, and he sang more than this in a karaoke scene. He was straight up bad.
See, that sounds great. I really like that idea. Yeah.
It was great. It was fun to watch him do it. You know, 10 Things I Hate About You, a movie with Heath Ledger, R.I.P., saying, can't take my eyes off of you over a PA system, no less.
That's, you know, that's tough. That's that's raw. That's vulnerable right there.
Yeah. You know, and but I'm not saying that, you know, as I said, they don't have to be bad. You know, you could have something like an impromptu musical moment in a non-musical, like in Anchorman when they break into Afternoon Delight.
Okay.
You know, and everyone joins in and is having fun. Or Wayne's World when they sing, of course, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Okay,
an Oscar over that movie.
I completely agree with you. I'm actually more intrigued with this category you're describing than the original song category.
Of course. Who can forget When Harry Met Sally, the karaoke scene where they sing Surrey with the Fringe on Top?
I have not actually seen that film. I need to. I know I need to. I will. I will watch that film.
Okay.
I've seen I've seen the scene in the restaurant. That's all I've seen.
Okay.
But I'll see. I'll watch it. But it sounds delightful. I quite like Oklahoma.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah. I'm going to toss you one of my category ideas.
Oh, yeah, shoot.
Most Improved Actor.
Ooh.
That seems like, you know, like if someone's really been working hard, and it doesn't have to mean they're bad. It just means like, hey, we can really tell that you put in some time and effort to up your game acting. And like we as the Academy, we appreciate the hustle that you're putting in as a thespian on screen. Thank you. Good job. I think that's a great award.
Translating something from a typical sports category into film, I think that's relatable.
Yeah, exactly.
Most people want to know that they've gotten better at things.
Most Improved Podcast Host? Thank you. I would take that in a heartbeat.
Well, let me ask you this. Who do you have any examples of who might get a Most Improved Actor?
Let's see here.
I can think of a few.
I mean, I'm assuming that there's probably some peak in the career of Nicolas Cage where he goes from, like, I don't know, being a clown with a colon disorder that's kind of funny and everybody laughs at him. He goes from that to, like, being a warlord, maybe. And you're like, oh, well, okay, there's some good acting chops right there. I don't know. I'm just shooting from the hip there.
Yeah. Or could this, is this a, now let me ask you this. Is this a film-to-film award or a... last year you did this movie and it was kind of this year you've done this movie and it's pretty good. Or is this like almost more like a lifetime achievement thing where
I think more like lifetime achievement it's just clear that you've gotten much better as an actor qualitatively. Could be a body of work, which interesting there too. If you were an aspiring actor or actress and you wanted to get this award at some point in the future, it would behoove you to make your first film terrible so that the gap of your squalid performance is noticeably worse than where you are at the peak of your career.
So, for instance, like, who's someone who was real garbage at the beginning?
Didn't John Voight, like, there's some film that he's in that, like, he was really embarrassed. I don't even, it's not the one he got nominated for, but there's some film that he thought was so terrible that he didn't think he could even get cast in things for a while.
Yeah.
Or anybody in the Star Wars Christmas special.
Sure. Well, that would be great because then you could have given Carrie Fisher a Most Improved Actor.
Yeah.
You know, because look at her from Star Wars Christmas Special to, you know, say When Harry Met Sally.
I've not seen Harry Met Sally. I'm going to have to assume that that's a great. I didn't know she was in there. That's awesome. Oh, yeah. She's dating Billy Crystal, right?
No. She dates the other guy. They fall in love. They get married.
I am I have a deficiency in pop culture. I have some friends in New York who think that I am an android and that I was brought online circa 2008 or so.
That makes no sense.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not.
But most of your references are well before 2008.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. Yeah, they're thinking, yeah, that's true. You're right. I don't know. I'm not really sure about the chronology. They're terrible. They're awful. I look to upgrade. Hold on. So we've knocked out two categories. We've got from you best song from a non-singer. What else do you think would be improve the Oscars?
I'm a big fan of best scene in a car.
Okay. So Baby Driver would be in that category. There's a lot of car scenes if you think about it. There's a lot of scenes in cars.
Well, and you think about it, most people spend a good deal of their lives in a car. I mean,
true.
Living in Los Angeles as I do, I spend a lot
in
of my
Volkswagen.
Life in a car. And think about how many great, you know, every, I think if you really think about it, the best dialogue scenes that you've ever seen are taking place in cars.
Yeah.
You know, just for example, you got your high tension car scenes like, an Oscar winner, Argo, had that VW bus scene where they're trying to get out of Iran. High octane, high action.
Wait, I thought Argo was set in Minnesota. No, hold on. That's Fargo. Mm. They're probably unrelated.
Yeah, Fargo.
Okay.
Actually, North Dakota.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. Continue.
Best Picture winner last year, Shape of Water. There's that scene where he's buying a 1962 Cadillac Series 62, right? He's driving in it later. It's like an example of how that character feels like he's kind of made it. Hmm. He sees a bunch of teenagers. He smiles. That's a good, good summation of what's going on in that scene. Or Moonlight. There's you saw Moonlight. There's that scene at the end of the movie where he reconnects with someone who he's had feelings for. And they're having that little scene in that 1978 Oldsmobile. And they're just really like connecting.
I think this is a great category. Okay, best.
Training Day. Like, I got more. Hold on, Training Day. There's that whole scene where he's like, "Ooh, this is The Office," right? Or who can forget that first scene in When Harry Met Sally, when they're in that 1976 Toyota Corona wagon, that first meeting scene in When Harry Met Sally.
Yeah.
No, she's not in that.
I've not seen Harry Met Sally. You keep bringing up Harry. Okay, again, I will watch it. It sounds great. All right, hold on. I'm gonna tell you one of my great ideas again. Okay. Best use of the Wilhelm scream in a film or documentary.
Mm.
Which, for those of you not at home, and I should have lined this up earlier, but you can Google this Wilhelm scream. Although, if in the control booth, if you guys happen to have that on hand, feel free to drop it in. But the Wilhelm scream, if you're unfamiliar with this, it's in every single film where someone falls off a bridge or gets shot or anything like that. It's this very, you'll like, once you hear it, you'll know it, and it's in virtually every single film. So I kind of want to see how people can get creative with that.
Yeah, I'm on board for that. I remember, my first introduction to the Wilhelm scream that I noticed was Return of the Jedi.
Yeah. Okay. I was about to say for me, Indiana Jones, I think, is the one where I was like, oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I believe.
Hold on. So Young, I'm gonna play it for it so our listeners can hear
great,
it.
Great.
Go ahead, guys. One more time. That's the Wilhelm scream. It's in pretty much every film you've ever seen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great, it's got a pathos to it, that scream, because you can feel the hurt of the actor.
So Wilhelm scream, I'm kicking it back to you. What's another good rule for you, a good award category for you?
I think a really, really relatable one is best mustache.
Yeah. Okay. Nice. I like it.
Everyone's encountered a mustache at some point in their life, and seeing one really, you know, it's hard to pull off a mustache for a lot of people without appearing like a creep.
And you know what? So then Ron Burgundy, who I love that mm-hmm. film, he could have got an Oscar. Will Ferrell could have got an Oscar for best mustache.
Course.
That would have been awesome.
Of course. And you know, Josh Brolin might have won an Oscar for No Country, or Leo in Departed.
Okay.
This year, Rami Malek could have been nominated for Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, Freddie Mercury has a mustache what about, I haven't seen Roma. I would assume that there's a mustache in Roma.
That makes sense to me. Probably. We're all thinking it. There's probably a mustache there somewhere.
Or, you know, what about, someone like Bruno Kirby in When Harry Met Sally? Had a great mustache in that film.
I'm going to take your word for it. I'm thinking, here's one. Best sequel to a remake of a remake.
Mm. So you're thinking something like, for example, A Star Is Born.
They've already made two films about Lady Gaga and they've remade a third one?
A Star Is Born films are just about Lady Gaga. Every version of them.
Really impressed that she's inspiring that much. That's impressive. I want to clarify, that would be different than remaking the same kind of film, because I would also have a category for best effort to recreate Dances with Wolves. because stuff like Avatar would fall into that category where it's like, that's pretty good interpretation of Dancing with Wolves right there.
Yeah. I think that category would be popular because remakes, most people love to see things remade.
Mm-hmm.
There's been, especially lately, most of the films that you see are some sort of like property remake or rehash. You know, we saw Star Trek, which they didn't call a remake. They called it a parallel. You know, blah, blah, blah. But very popular.
So my category of best sequel to a remake of a remake would be if they redo Star Trek. Or I would loosely put it in that category because you're right. It's not like they just redid the motion picture or anything, which I don't know whether that would be terrible or better. I'm not really sure.
Would that qualify because, well, no, I guess the motion picture is not a remake of the TV series.
No. Yeah. You gotta have something. I would be cool for them to, sorry, my mic cut a little bit. We'll edit that out, hopefully. Okay, Young, how about another one to you?
Okay, let's see. What about, this is maybe not a necessarily something that is so relatable in terms of, but it's something that everyone aspires to. Something that everyone dreams, you know, you always have that moment where you walk out of a situation. You're like, oh, I had the perfect thing to say. Right. You know, I had the perfect line that would like really sum up what I felt.
Oh yeah. That's every fight I have winds up with me thinking of a good one-liner 48 hours later while I'm about to go to sleep.
So yeah, best one line, you know, best one-liner, best sum up.
Best one-liner's fantastic.
Yeah.
Because there are all these iconic one-liners, and they're definitely, you know, written into the script. Best one-liner's awesome.
Yeah. Like, for instance, I'm thinking, like, in Jaws, you're going to need a bigger boat. Huh?
Good.
Man, to have said that in that moment when, that's a big shark, and to have summed that up with, I mean, that's exactly right.
He's communicating that he is unflappable by the size of that shark. He's going to deal with it, and it's just a problem he's going to deal with. Go ahead, make my day. Pretty good one-liner.
Go ahead. Yeah, yeah. Godfather's going to make an offer he can't refuse.
Right.
You know, he's summing up. I mean, we know what that character's about now.
Yeah, he's actually a crime lord.
Yeah, that's what that's about.
I quite like, best one-liners. That's pretty good.
Or I'm thinking like 12 years a slave. I don't want to survive. I want to live. That's a line with pathos. Or I'll have what she's having from When Harry Met Sally.
I do know that. That I agree. That is, I knowing that scene pretty well, that is a well-delivered line. I don't know the actress that did it, but you nailed it. Whoever you are.
That's Rob Reiner's mother.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Good job, Mrs. Reiner. That's awesome. Okay. Back to me. I think this one would be very popular. Most tasteful sex scene.
Oh.
So, first of all, like, you're watching the Oscars, and they tell you most tasteful sex scene's coming up. But first, a commercial break. You're coming back for that. I would want to know one, and I would keep this intentionally ambiguous. Is this graded on how tasteful it is, or is this the best sex scene, which is also tasteful? Like, is it like there's like a certain moral standard that must be met, but then after that, we're just grading it how hot it is, or is it really just how like tasteful and artistic it is?
Well, it's your category. What do you think?
I wouldn't clarify. I wouldn't nail it down. I would leave it to the Academy to determine which one they thought was best. That way there's more ambiguity there. So you could
have a really explicit sex scene like in Shame, for instance.
I haven't seen that one. I'm also told that Clockwork Orange has a lot of stuff in it. I haven't seen that one either.
Clockwork Orange does. Or you could have like a really tasteful, like just hinted at sex scene, like the sex scene at the end of When Harry Met Sally.
I guess. I haven't seen Harry Met Sally. I don't know why that's the... Okay, apparently that's like the touchstone. Yes, that is a great example of the range of things there. Or like in this year's films, there's The Favorite. There are a couple of sex scenes in The Favorite, or at least allusions to sex. So you could do that. I don't know about Lady Gaga or RGB Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I assume and hope there's not, but you know, maybe. I don't know. It could be interesting.
There's definitely some sex in Bohemian Rhapsody.
Okay, yeah.
You know, there's some sex in I think there's, is there maybe some sex in Incredibles 2?
I doubt it. Maybe.
Okay.
Seems unlikely. Anyway, it seems like a good category. All right, back to you, sir.
Spice that up. okay. What about best character who is in a mask?
Okay.
You know?
Wait, so like, would this be like in Boondock Saints where they're wearing ski masks part of the time? So they would be eligible for that category, and then you're determining which of the guys in the ski masks did the best job?
Yeah. Well, I mean, because you think about it, it's here's two things.
Or Full Metal Jacket, I think there's a mask in that.
Yeah, or Halloween, he's in a mask.
Oh, great,
Halloween. You know, I think masks are relatable.
I'm sure you know this, Young, but in Halloween, for listeners that don't know this, that mask is a William Shatner mask.
Yeah.
They got it on sale and they just painted it white. But yeah, Michael in Halloween, that's William Shatner's face.
And I think all of us can connect to the idea of wearing a mask because we had a Halloween experience.
I feel like I never take my mask off. I'm always wearing it. Always.
Yeah.
Nothing but masks all the way down. I don't even know what I believe, what I think, what I feel.
Or like in Mission Impossible, you know, when he pulls off the mask and it's not John Voight, it's Tom Cruise.
Oh, okay. So like a face mask. Or like, what about, would in Face Off with Nicolas Cage, would they be eligible? Because they're not really wearing.
Sure.
Okay, so they are. Okay, so you're gotcha. Okay, that's a cool category. I would want to check out that category.
Yeah, or like you know, they didn't have it in this movie, but there could have been an opportunity in When Harry Met Sally for them to wear New Year's Eve masks.
That's great. Yeah. All right. Here's another one. This next award I think would be great because it would bring in people that aren't necessarily professional actors. So, best unnecessary yet charming use of a CNN anchor in an action film about a fake city.
All right, hold on. Say that to me again.
This is best unnecessary yet charming use of a CNN anchor in an action film about a fake city. So, you know, like in Spider-Man or Batman, where they're like, oh, the city's under attack from the Hobgoblin. He's got a flying surfboard, and he's just laying waste to our fair city. That kind of thing, right? So like Metropolis, I think, is the name of that city, and there's also Gotham. Wait, hold on. Is Spider-Man set in New York, or is it Metropolis? That's Superman, right?
Superman is Metropolis. Spider-Man is New York.
Oh, okay.
And Batman is Gotham. Metropolis is actually in Middle America. Sometimes it's not shown to be that, but it's supposed to be
Chicago?
Far from Kansas.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Ah, nice. Well done, Superman, then. That makes sense. I might remove the fake city addendum there, just in order to make this a little bit more expansive as a category, but I think that'd be fun.
Well, yeah. And does it have to be action stuff? Let me ask you this. Does it have to be CNN? Does it have to be action? Because I'm thinking, like, you know, a lot of more serious movies have, you know, people pop on and play little roles. I think there's some people in Vice, right? I haven't seen it.
Almost,
right?
I would imagine there's. I think they're actors. I don't remember seeing any anchors that I recognize, but occasionally you see people pop up. Like I've seen like Greg Gutfeld pop up in a couple of things where they'll have him host some program. At least in other comedy show or in comedy shows, I've seen him a couple of times. You're right. I would remove the CNN. It has to be a real anchor. It doesn't have to be CNN anchor. And probably not an action film. Yeah. Because there's probably some good apocalyptic films that I don't know that I would describe as an action film that would make good use of that.
Yeah. So I was also thinking Larry King shows up in Ghostbusters.
Oh, nice. Yeah, perfect. Great example. Yeah. See, okay. Maybe that's it. Maybe a better way of saying it is an anchor doing a cameo. I would like a category for best anchor cameo.
I like it.
Okay. Nice.
I think people connect to that because people watch, you know, summaries of the news.
Are there any categories you have of someone doing something in a particular way? Like there's an emotional force behind them?
Oh, well, yes. So I've been thinking a lot about this. And what about one for people opening a door with authority?
Oh, I like that. Can you give some examples?
There's some great scenes in Wolf of Wall Street where a person enters a door and you're like, oh, that person's now in the room. You know, or I assume there's some in The Favorite There's a lot of, anytime you argue and you want to be like, oh, I have a point of view, you can open a door with authority, or
you just fling that door open and walk in and go, you know what else, or whatever your opening line is, but it's declarative for sure. You don't go fling the door open and then go, hey, if you guys aren't busy, I really want to talk to you about this thing that's bothering me. No, you go in and you go, we are declaring war on France.
Yeah. Or like in When Harry Met Sally, when she wants to indicate exactly how she feels about Harry and about what she's going through right now. She enters that door with authority.
I've not seen... Okay. Right. Category that I would kick in. Best How the Hell Did This Get Made award. Which I feel like is kind of like, granted, it's sort of a limit award, but I also feel like there are the rooms of this world that I would like to have a little bit of exposure in the Oscars just to see what they're like and play a little bit of a scene and go, how the hell did they make that? Why, who funded that? I would like to see that as a category.
I think an easy nominee for a lot of those is a large majority of Nicolas Cage movies.
Yeah.
Like Mandy last year.
What was Mandy about?
I don't know.
Okay.
But I saw the trailer and it was nuts.
It wasn't. It was just, it rutted around a lot?
Yeah. It was him. It was him yelling and screaming. I heard it was crazy. So, you know.
So before we kick it off, Young, because I do think we have saved the Oscars from themselves. Before we kick it off, I'm just going to run through a bunch of ideas I have.
Sure.
And then why don't you tell me which one you think is the best idea? And we'll finish off on that. Okay. So I'm going to run through these real quick. Best animal in a film. This would be like the dog and Marley and me, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Best award speech, very meta.
Wait, in a film?
No, best award speech from the previous year, or if they're really on top of their game, you would do it at the end of the evening for award speeches of that year. Like you'd have running judges like in America's Got Talent, and whoever did the best one gets an Oscar for the best award speech. So you get two awards. Annual award for Patrick Stewart. I think that it should be incumbent upon the Academy to come up with an award for Patrick Stewart every year. He gets an Oscar every year and they have to figure out why. That's their job. He's doing his job acting. They should figure out how to reward him better, my opinion. Okay. Best fake accent. This is kind of like your song award. This is if, Emma Stone is British or if an Australian is American. There's a lot of Australians that pretend to be Americans. They're pretty good at that, right? So best fake accent. Best woke actor or actress in a documentary series about woke stuff.
Okay, for example.
I'm not sure. I feel like that would satisfy an itch in Hollywood. I feel like there is an impulse there, and I want to give that an opportunity for release.
Okay.
Now, similarly, and I'm actually a lot more interested in this one, actor or actress most likely to have a Me Too moment in the next year.
Oh.
And then you could do a follow-up the following year of like, we all really thought, Geraldo Rivera, we thought he was... Nope, he's going strong.
Oh, okay. So you're not saying someone who's about to experience trauma. You're saying someone who caused trauma.
Yes. I think it would be horrible.
Paint
a target on someone and go, you know, this person seems kind of like you could kind of push them around and maybe sexually exploit them for film purposes. I don't want to incentivize that. That seems like a very negative thing to have. No, this is
for the Kevin Spaceys.
This is for the Kevin Spaceys and the Harvey Weinsteins of the world, where like Harvey Weinstein, you can watch like a 30 Rock and they're making jokes about like, don't go to Harvey Weinstein's house. Like there are a lot of open secrets there that I feel like get ahead of the game on that. Okay.
Yeah. People knew these things.
Yeah. Best picture that paints a stunningly obvious metaphor of the Trump presidency. Probably wouldn't be every year, but I feel like this will probably be a thing for the next few years.
Okay.
Yeah, so stunning, obvious Trump metaphor. Best cameo appearance of Woody Harrelson.
Great.
Yeah, I think that'd be fun. This one's important. I don't know why this isn't one. Best Netflix series that doesn't get an Oscar, but frigging deserves an Oscar.
Okay, series. So this is television.
Yeah. Or like, it's not Netflix, but I put Game of Thrones in that category. Of like, Game of Thrones could trump every single Best Picture film. Absolutely, 100%.
Okay.
And in fact, you can even just take an episode of Game of Thrones and probably put it in the mix and it would win, in my opinion.
All right. Okay. I'm with you there.
And then we'll finish it up with this one. Award for best attempt to revive Nicolas Cage's career.
Okay.
There's a lot of those. Which one do you think is best?
I'm going to go with best fake accent. Because I feel like... Billy Crystal's accent when he did the pepper and my poppycosh scene in When Harry Met Sally was underappreciated.
Okay.
And that could have gotten an Oscar for sure.
Yeah. All right. I will go and watch that film. I will watch that film in preparation for when we do this a year hence.
Great.
Assuming that we have been able to save the Oscars from itself. Young, I've enjoyed this. Thank you for coming on. Hey, we've got an announcement from Mercury One. Want to see an amazing exhibit on American history? Check out Mercury One's latest project, 12 Score and 3 Years Ago, The Unfinished Promise of Unity. This summer, from June 28th to July 7th at Mercury Studios in Irving, Texas, incidentally, where I work, Mercury One will offer an eye-opening exploration of slavery and freedom and will equip visitors to become modern abolitionists and changemakers in their own communities. At 12 Score and 3 Years Ago, visitors will meet unsung African-American heroes and be immersed in their stories and successes. 12 Score, a follow-up to last year's Rights and Responsibilities pop-up museum, will also feature incredible artifacts like original documents from Abraham Lincoln, as well as priceless portraits, artwork, and more. A visit to 12 Score will conclude with a moving look at slavery today, as over 40 million people remain locked in human trafficking around the world. Mercury One is also proud to announce its exciting world-class partnerships for 12 Score with the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum, the Dallas-based African American Museum, the Frontiers of Flight Museum, the Dallas Historical Society, and the Old Red Museum of Dallas County History and Culture. Be sure to purchase your tickets at mercuryone.org. VIP tours with Glenn Beck and wall builders historian David Barton are available, but will sell out pretty quickly, so get on top of that. Thank you for supporting Mercury One. MercuryOne.org, that's MercuryOne.org, or call 972-499-4747. Remember, you can always tweet ideas of ways to improve the Academy Awards, categories which should exist, awards which should exist. Tweet them to me, at Mighty Heaton. Or you can Facebook me at Facebook.com/Mighty Heaton, or even email me. Although, why would you do that with this? Because with category awards, this, you need to share this with the community here. But you could email me by subscribing to my newsletter at MightyHeaton.com and just replying when I send out on Fridays. I'd also like to encourage you to subscribe to Blaze TV and download the Blaze TV app. If you do, you can watch me instead of just listening to me. Use the promo code Heaton to get $10 off your annual Blaze TV subscription. I look like your next ex-husband. So download Blaze TV app on iTunes or Google Play. Get subscribed to The Blaze and fall in love with me more than you already are. You can also watch portions of the show on Facebook Watch by going to Facebook.com/HeatonTV. Finally, please rate and review this podcast. That helps other people discover this delightful political orphanage. Thank you and good day.